Good morning, and on today's programme, how the tech sector in Ukraine refused to let the Russian invasion curtail its annual event. And we hear about a mass stranding of whales in Australia. But first, we go to Nigeria, where more than 300 people have drowned in the worst floods in a decade in that country. The floods were in 27 out of Nigeria's 36 states and in the capital, Abuja. More than 100,000 people have been displaced from their homes. From Abuja, Nigeria, Palum David reports.
Over 60% of Nigeria's coastal cities are being washed away by floods from torrential rainfalls, killing and displacing thousands of citizens. There are two seasons in Nigeria, dry and rainy seasons. The rainy season begins by April and lasts until October. The annual rainfall amount ranges from 390 millimeters in the north to over 2,970 millimeters in the south. Nigerian government predicted an abnormal rainy season for 2022 due to global warming. The rains this year have brought the worst flooding experienced in a decade. More than 500,000 people have been negatively impacted. 300 lives have been lost to flood and over 100,000 displaced. Many flee from their houses to seek safety. Even the dead are not allowed to rest as flood has washed away about 500 buried corpses from their shallow graves. Marketplaces and thousands of hectares of farmlands have also been submerged in water. Farmers say the rising waters will push food bills higher amidst the country's worsening inflation. Head of Nigeria's Emergency Management Agency, Mustafa Ahmed, said the Lagdo Dam in Cameroon released excess water from the reservoir on September 13th. The released water flowed down into Nigeria through our rivers and overwhelmed communities that have already been impacted by heavy rainfall. Nigeria's inland reservoirs are also already overflowing. So, frontline states and communities along the coast are currently between 50% to 100% underwater. Flood from the River Niger, which is one of the two largest rivers in Nigeria, has overflowed into the highways and local canoes and now used to transport commuters across the waterlogged roads. The floods have led to gridlock and delayed journeys for travelers plying the routes. Head of Nigeria's road safety body, Dauda Biu, cautioned motorists and passengers to beware of flooded routes. Transport companies, commercial drivers, and logistics companies are losing revenue daily as the flooding is affecting interstate travel. Fuel tankers are also unable to pass through these waters to offload their product. So, Nigeria's capital, Abuja, in particular, is currently facing heavy fuel scarcity. Seeing all this, Director General of Nigeria Meteorological Agency, Mansur Mutazu, lamented that it is regrettable that with all efforts dedicated to the development of the early warning tools, governments at the sub-national level have failed to heed to the advisories. Director General of the Nigeria Hydrological Service Agency, Clement Nze, urged citizens to comply with the environmental guidelines and town planning regulations to avoid more flood disasters. He said cities that are supposed to experience 800 millimeters of rainfall in 6 months are having about 400 millimeters of rainfall in just about 4 hours. Nigeria's Ministry of Water Resources say they are putting up structural control measures such as dams, canals, storm drains, and other facilities to divert flood waters from flood risk zones. The government is distributing relief material to flood victims. These items include sewing and grinding machines, mattresses, blankets, diapers, palm and vegetable oil, detergents, noodles, bags of rice, maize, flour, beans, salt, sugar, among others. But these relief materials are not just what people want. they need the government to provide adequate preventive measure early enough to curb these annual irreparable losses to floods, which affect 27 out of Nigeria's 36 states, including the capital city, Abuja. For World Report, this is Polum David in Abuja, Nigeria.
Next to Ukraine, where tech companies have shown defiance and resilience by not letting the Russian invasion curtail their big annual tech event in Lviv, Ukraine's thriving tech sector has also been helping in the war effort there, as Fiona Alston reports now from Lviv.
The Ukrainian tech sector descended on Lviv recently for the annual IT Arena tech event, named Ukraine 3.0, Brave, Resilient, Digital. The usually large tech event was a smaller affair, in size only, but not in heart. The tech sector has been a lifeblood to the Ukrainian economy during the war, and in part to the frontline defence. The scaled-down conference was held in a couple of locations across the city of Lviv, with clarity on where events were to be held on a need-to-know basis, not hiding the event from the world, but taking all the precautions necessary to ensure attendees' safety. As with most tech events, the energy of the attendees and startups was palpable. The only reminder that this event was being held during these unusual of circumstances was the airstrike sirens warning people to take shelter. The first venue was an actual shelter, and the second, Lviv's Theatre of Opera and Ballet, had a shelter in the basement, which we all filed into as a warning rang throughout. Among the many startup founders, investors and government representatives in attendance at the event was Valerie Dobrovolsky, Future Industries team lead for USAID Competitive Economy Program in Ukraine, which is funded by the United States Agency for International Development, helping Ukrainian startups and SMEs develop locally and internationally. Valerie told me why the Ukraine tech sector is so significant. Early on in 2019, when we started, we identified that IT and technology is one of the most promising industries that can transform Ukraine and the Ukrainian economy and move the wealth and the local value further, he said. During this time, USAID has seen IT become one of the best performing export industries in Ukraine. During 7 months of the war in Ukraine, he said, it became the best performing export industry that demonstrates significant business resilience to keep the economic front running and continue retaining high paid jobs and keep the companies in Ukraine. 50% of IT companies did not relocate, but instead moved to remote working. Throughout the event, the startup competition featuring over 100 pitching startups filled the stages between panel discussions. The competition, which claims to be where the best and the brightest entrepreneurs, investors, business angels and tech geeks gather, was eventually won by Rap, a video production planner designed to take the stress out of film production. We were scared that during the war, the startup movement would slow down and become silent, said Valerie. Many of them need funding, of course, but all of them continue to work on the future. According to a Forbes Ukraine report, less than 4% of more than 250 technology startups in the portfolios of the most active players of the Ukrainian venture market have significantly reduced turnover, but none of them closed. At the event, most panel discussions turned to the war and what was being done in particular areas to help with the war effort. Drones and cybersecurity are hot topics in warfare tech, with testing timelines significantly reduced when it comes to war. When it comes to hardware and engineering solutions and products, things are being tested in the field immediately, within 2 or 3 months. That would normally take years to test in a lab. Yevgenia Besplalova is an ambassador for Ukrainian IT and returned from Valencia, where she'd relocated to with her two children when the war started, to attend the event as a mentor. 2 months ago, I didn't dream about offline events in Ukraine, she said. It's dangerous and there are lots of risks, but we need to develop markets I'm really glad there are many attendees from other countries. It's a really big support for us. At all the conferences I go to, I'm always asked the same question. How can we support Ukraine? And I give the same answer. Work with us. Invest in our startups. Work with our companies and hire our people. It will be a great support for Ukraine now. For World Report, this is Fiona Alston in Lviv.
Finally to Australia, where marine authorities have said that fewer than one in five whales involved in a mass stranding in the state of Tasmania have survived. Experts believe the so-called Apple Island has become a hotspot for beached whales. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Tasmania is a graveyard for whales, but no one is quite sure why. Dozens of long-finned pilot whales died in the latest mass stranding close to a channel known as Hell's Gates. It was perilous to shipping and also to wildlife. The pod came to grief at Ocean Beach near Macquarie Harbour, which is notorious for its dangerously shallow entrance. It's not too far from the tourist town of Strawn on Tasmania's rugged west coast. More than 230 whales became trapped, but more than 170 were already dead when rescuers arrived. Their efforts were painstaking. Manoeuvring vehicles and heavy equipment in the soft sand was arduous, and the tides were challenging too. State government workers, volunteers from the community and the salmon farming industry laboured alongside vets to rescue the animals. They were towed one by one into waters off the coast. 44 were saved. Preliminary satellite data is encouraging. Two of the rescued mammals were fitted with trackers. They show that the pilot whales, which are actually large oceanic dolphins, are now well south of Tasmania. A community meeting was held in Strawn to keep residents informed. On the coast, there is great distress that so many of these majestic animals were lost. Long-finned pilot whales are often seen in waters off southern Australia. Almost 200 dead whales at Macquarie Harbour were tied together and pulled out to sea, where they were expected to drift away and decompose in the Southern Ocean. Some of the carcasses could wash up on Tasmania's beaches over the next few weeks because of currents and tides. Tissue samples were taken to detect any toxins, and other tests have been done to rule out any unnatural causes for the deaths. It was thought that some of the whales may have been drawn in from the deeper waters where they live, either because of sickness or to chase squid. 2 years ago, 470 pilot whales ran aground on sandbars in the same area near Strawn. Most died, although rescuers did manage to save just over 100 in what was Australia's worst whale stranding. Scientists aren't sure why Tasmania is a whale trap. There are various theories. It could be that the leader of the pod gets lost or frightened. Changes to the Earth's magnetic properties or warmer ocean temperatures that move the whale's traditional sources of food could also be to blame. Other experts have suggested that the island of Tasmania, which at about 68,000 square kilometres is smaller than Ireland, could just be a giant navigational hazard for animals that use echolocation or reflected sound. Pilot whales are highly sociable and inquisitive creatures. They rest, hunt, play and travel as a unified pod. They form strong bonds, and because they can communicate with each other, experts believe this can result in the pod following those that are disorientated or sick. Last week, more than a dozen sperm whales died after washing ashore on King Island in Bass Strait between the Australian mainland and Tasmania. Marine scientists have said it's unusual for sperm whales to wash onto the coast. The strandings are another part of the Apple Islands' unsolved whale trap mystery. For World Report, this is Phil Mercer in Sydney.
And that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. But until then, from myself, Carol Coleman, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.